all of them, in a week? Seemed like a bit of a tall order, really. But it set me thinking, what is the crux of Jesus' teaching? If we wanted to sum up everything Jesus told us, or everything Jesus taught, in a few sentences, a few sound bites, what would it be? It may be that we'd all come up with quite different answers, maybe pick out one bit that particularly resonates with us. And of course, in many places, Jesus teaches about how we should live our lives, about how we should behave or how we shouldn't behave, how we should get on with one another. But I began to think, well, actually, is it really about, Jesus' teaching is actually to show us what God is like. He's actually to show us the God that we serve. As we read in our various readings and services over Christmas, Jesus came to point the way to the Father. And that actually through these parables, through all Jesus' teachings, what Jesus is really saying is, look, this is what God is like. This is who God is. This is the God who longs for us to have a relationship with him and to worship him. So from these three parables, which I guess are quite familiar to many of us, I'm not going to pretend to say anything new that's never been said before, because that's a terribly dangerous position to try and get yourself into. But I just want to pick out three things that I think it can teach us about God. And the first one is that God's heart is to find the lost and the broken. Just as in a slightly flippant way earlier, Peter had lost his sweets and was, really happy and celebrating when he got them back. Yet God's heart is to find the lost and the broken and to bring them back and restore them to relationship with him. If we think about a lost coin, £1 coin is, pretty much like another pound coin, really, isn't it? A coin is a coin. But then what about the sheep? Now, to me, one sheep really does look rather like another sheep. And if I look at a field of sheep, I couldn't honestly tell you the difference between them. But if I was a farmer or a shepherd, then I guess I'd probably be able to, because I get to know those sheep and maybe see that they look a bit different. Perhaps they have different personalities, maybe behave in different ways. And actually, the one that got lost is so important. I guess we might think, this farmer had 100 sheep and he's lost one of them. Oh, he's got another 99. But no. That's Jesus' point. The one that is lost is so important. However many more are there, for this shepherd, it's worth leaving all of those 99 and going off to find the one that has got lost. You see, this lost sheep, the only difference between that sheep and the rest of the sheep is that it's lost. It's not worth a different amount of money. We're not told that it, you know, looked any different. The difference was that it was lost. And what Jesus is saying through these parables, and this is really why we read the whole of this chapter, that they follow what applies to the sheep applies to the lost son as well. You see, we look at people and it's perfectly obvious that in many respects we're not all exactly the same. We look different, we have different abilities, different interests, different personalities. But yet, in God's eyes, we are all incredibly valuable. Each one of us is worth searching for. If just one of us wasn't here this morning, yeah, let's be honest, we're a large group of people. We can't know everybody here by name. We can't always know if one person doesn't come to church, but God knows. And he cares hugely about each one of us. But not just about each one of us, but each person who the street pastors encountered the early hours of this morning. Each of the people who come to the Beacon during the week to get a meal. Each one of those people living on that dump site in Manila. Each of those children and their mums that Esther's working with in her nursery. Every single person, every single human being is valuable to God, and he longs to find each one that is lost, to restore them back to a relationship with him. And what rejoicing that would bring. God's heart is to find the lost and to bring them back. And then secondly, these stories teach us about God's incredible, outrageous grace. Just think about what we often call the parable of the prodigal son. And this younger son basically heaps shame upon his family. When we sort of try and look at this story with the cultural eyes of the time it was written, that for the younger son to demand their inheritance just wasn't done. It meant not just handing over the cash in the wallet, it would have meant selling half of the land, literally breaking up the estate. We're very used to, you know, young people grow up, go away to college or university, maybe choose to live a different part of the country, and that's just quite normal for us. But actually, in first century Palestine, you stayed around and you looked after your parents in their old age. You didn't decide you were going to clear off and go somewhere else. This was clearly a wealthy landowner. And huge shame would be on that family because of the behaviour of this younger son. And yet, his father allowed him to go. I suppose he could have refused, said, no, I'm not giving you your inheritance. And then, well, we wouldn't be reading about it now, would we? Because it wouldn't be in our Bibles. Because there wouldn't be a story there. But the father loves his son so much, he allows him to go. He lets go, and yet it's very clear that he never let go in his heart. He continued to love this rebellious, difficult, awkward son, just as much as if he was still there living with him. He never let go, constantly looked out for him. Maybe wondered whether he'd come back. Probably prayed that he would come back. And when he does return, somewhat humbled, having realised basically what an idiot he'd been, when he begins to see some sense and comes back home, he must have wondered what sort of reception he was going to get. And yet his father literally throws open his arms and welcomes him back and celebrates. The older son, of course, wasn't quite so enthusiastic. And, you know, humanly, I have some sympathy with him. I think we can maybe, you know, see that, frankly, it wasn't fair. His younger brother had taken all the money, gone off, lived the high life, brought shame on his family whilst he'd been there, been the dutiful son. And he comes back and there's a great party. I think we can maybe see the story from the older son's point of view, but yet it's condemned, isn't it? That's not the right way to think. And just as this father loved his son unconditionally, so God's grace towards us is unconditional, is outrageous. Logically, perhaps it doesn't make sense. Sometimes it looks as though it isn't fair. But God loves each one of us, each person on this planet, unconditionally and incredibly. And then thirdly, this shows us that God loves parties. I don't know how many of us here love a good party. Yeah, there'll be some of us who can't wait to get up there and, you know, the music and the dancing and get involved. And others of us who would maybe prefer to sit more quietly in a corner. But yet God loves to celebrate. Each time, yeah, we get that picture that when the coin is found, this woman gets her friends together and has a party to celebrate finding that was lost. Now, some of you are perhaps thinking, well, if you had a party every time you found something you'd lost, you wouldn't have time for life. But I guess we can all resonate with the huge relief when you finally find your phone, your car keys, that important piece of paper, your bank card, you know, whatever it was. Because actually, there is a certain panic sets in, isn't there, when you realise, I need that piece of paper and it isn't anywhere. It's vanished off the planet. And on the sixth trawl through every bit of paper on your desk, suddenly, there it is. And the relief is great, isn't it? And okay, we don't literally throw a party. But I think we all understand that sort of feeling. That God longs to celebrate. And that every time one lost soul is found, there's a party goes on in heaven. I wonder where you are in these stories. Whether maybe for some of us, we actually feel a bit lost. You were out somewhere in the cold. And we can come and sit in church, but all this, you know, God's love and our love for each other, that's for everybody else here. And we feel on the edge of it. We feel as though we're lost. Maybe we feel rebellious. You're a bit like this younger son. Actually, we just want to take what we have convinced ourselves we deserve, what we think we're owed, and we'll go off and live life our own way. Thank you very much. Or maybe you've tried that and have realised that actually it doesn't work. But finding a way back isn't always easy, is it? We don't really know how difficult this younger son found it to come back home, to risk being turned away, not really knowing what sort of reception he was going to get. That maybe the best he could hope for was that his father would take him on as a hired man, as a servant. And yet, he was welcomed. And if you're in that place and you'd love to find a way back, but you're just not quite sure, God will welcome you. Whatever you've done, however bad, however awful you might think it is. We can't be too far away to be welcomed back into God's loving arms. Or maybe it's that we're actually sort of on the, if you like, the other side of the story, that we long to seek out for those who are lost. That your heart is to share God's love, to help people to see that God loves them and wants to have a relationship with them. Or maybe we're a bit like that older son and we're having a bit of a tantrum and stamping our feet because we think, well, it's really not fair. And no, maybe it isn't. But it doesn't need to be. I think we can all find at least a part of ourselves somewhere within this story. And there's something here for each one of us. And wherever we are now, we have all been lost. And that celebration of knowing that we're found is very real. God loves to celebrate over us. He loves us unconditionally and incredibly. And the love that he has for us, he has too for all the people that you come into contact with tomorrow. For all the people that you might see walking downtown or wherever you are. God loves each one of those. And he loves to celebrate. And I think perhaps the challenge for us as I draw to a close this morning is that maybe we just need to look at things a bit differently. Maybe we need to see the world around us, the people around us, through God's eyes instead of through our eyes. It's very easy to look at people and make judgments, isn't it? And even if we don't really want to, and we know that we shouldn't, do we maybe sometimes find ourselves still doing that? maybe there's something in us that thinks we're a bit more important than somebody else. And yet these passages teach us that we're not. And finally, do we long to join in that celebration as we see people who are lost, who are broken, being restored to a relationship with God? And ask Mark and the band to come back and join us. And we're going to spend a bit of time just worshipping God. And I just invite you to just reflect on that question. Where am I in that story? And to just say to God, do I need to look at people differently? Do I need to see things through different eyes? Shall we stand together? And let's just reflect on that as we begin to worship.